Chapter 1 of Bitcoin was in proving Bitcoin as a system could work and establishing it as a store of value. With the latest round of institutional adoption and Elon Musk getting on board, we are just entering the bottom of the curve and thus the culmination of Chapter 1 of Bitcoin as a global store of value asset. But at the same time, we are entering Bitcoin's Chapter 2, and I think things are going to start moving really fast. Get ready for a Guy's Take episode. Let's get into it. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I think we're going to talk about Bitcoin today. Shocker, I know. But I have two previous episodes of the show that I think, if you haven't listened to them, they would be good prerequisites, or you can actually just listen to them afterward. But they're right in line with this topic, and they're a really great foundation, I think, to cover or to inform what we're digging into today. And I also have one later this week that's actually going to be spot on with this as well. And I love this piece. We've read a number by Roy Scheinfeld in the past. He is the CEO at Breeze, or Breeze Technology, and hosts the Breeze Wallet, which is one of my favorite Bitcoin wallets. He just released a new article that is going to be awesome, and we will definitely have it very soon. But the previous shows that I think would be really great for this one are the Stone Ridge Letter by Ross Stevens, and we're actually starting off with a little piece of something from Ross Stevens, and that was just a couple of weeks ago. And then also another one titled Lightning as a Retail Payments System. It was by Nicholas Berte and Chris Hunter. And they, like I said, they do just a really good job of setting the stage for what we're getting into here. Before we get into it, though, I want to thank our lovely sponsors who make this show possible. Level.co, LVL.co, is mobile banking directly integrated with Bitcoin and no exchange fees. You literally have an account, routing number, you have direct deposits, you have wire transfers, you have checks, and a debit card. So if you wanted to live off Bitcoin, Level is the service you were looking for. GuySwan.com/level will take you right there to check them out. And then, of course, for holding your own keys securely and simply, we have the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet from the guys at Shift Crypto. This is your cold storage solution. It is easy to use, is a really fast backup on a micro SD card, and you can become a true Bitcoiner in literally minutes. GuySwan.com/Bitbox to find out more about that. All right, so in a true Bitcoin Audible fashion, we're actually going to start this with a little read. And this is a tweet from, well, I'll explain in full, but Ryan Gentry, who is on the Lightning team and has built some amazing stuff, and he's explained a lot about Lightning. He's just such an awesome perspective on this, and I know so much about Lightning. And he politely explained why he could not come on the show, and now I hate him to the core, both just like as a person and professionally, but he had a really great tweet, which is actually a transcript. It's screenshots of a transcript of Ross Stevens speaking that there's audio of with Michael Saylor during Saylor's recent conference thing. And because I could not find the actual clip, I'm going to do the most like meta thing that I think I've ever done on this show, which is I'm going to read the tweet from Ryan, which consists of the screenshots of the transcript of what Ross Stevens actually said on a recording to Michael Saylor. So I don't know what level of inception we're at here, but let's go ahead and read the tweet. So Ryan says, "You need to read what Ross Stevens, executive chairman of NYDIG, said to Michael Saylor yesterday about how he's leveraging the Lightning Network Ellen Strike, Jack Mallers' Strike here, and Lightning. It describes Bitcoin's Chapter 2 in such a direct and incredible way. Buckle up. So Saylor says, Bitcoin didn't exist, now it does. What is Chapter 2? Ross Stevens. Well, I think Chapter 2 is going to be incredibly exciting. Chapter 2 builds on Bitcoin the asset and adds Bitcoin the network. In Chapter 2, Bitcoin the network solely leverages Bitcoin's proprietariness as an open source monetary network. In Chapter 1, we reached millions. In Chapter 2, we're going to reach billions, and we're going to do it quickly. And Chapter 2 starts right now. I'll give you a flavor of Chapter 2. So I want to send $1,000. I'm sitting in New York right now to a friend in Milan, Italy. Strike, Jack Mallers' firm, working with NYDIG, takes my dollars and delivers them to my Milan friend in euros instantly and for free. What? How did this happen? So let's go slow. First, Strike takes my dollars from my bank account, my $1,000, and they debit it. That's a millisecond. Second, Strike works with NYDIG and we do a trade. We convert the $1,000 into Bitcoin. That's another millisecond or two. Third, Strike works with Lightning Labs and zips the Bitcoin across the Atlantic Ocean to Milan. We're still in single-digit milliseconds here, basically instantly. Over there, there's another FX trader. NYDIG converts that Bitcoin into euros. And finally, Strike credits my friend's bank account with final settlement in euros. Done. So what just happened? What happened is $1,000 were moved from me in New York to my friend in Milan and converted into euros instantly and for free. How? Because for the first time in history, we have an electronic bearer asset. We've never had an electronic bearer asset called Bitcoin, and an electronic monetary network also called Bitcoin that together can achieve cash finality anywhere in the world, anytime, 24/7, 365, with liquidity in any currency pair you care about. And notice something critical in the transaction I described. The volatility of Bitcoin the asset was nowhere to be found. Why? Because we didn't use it. We didn't use it for its properties as an asset. We used Bitcoin for its properties as an open-sourced monetary network. Now, I gave you an example of two friends moving $1,000 from New York to Milan. That's cute. It's adorable. Imagine the entire global import-export industry with instant and free international settlement. Imagine the entire global remittance market with international and free global settlement. Imagine the entire global credit card industry with no merchant fees, right? I mean, use the open source networks of Bitcoin and open source networks of Lightning, and Bitcoin the network will change the way we all interact and connect. This part, Chapter 2 of Bitcoin, this part has nothing to do with monetary policy. This part has nothing to do with central bankers, with dollar depreciation, zero. However, there will be this virtuous, beautiful feedback loop between Bitcoin the asset and Bitcoin the network, and Bitcoin the asset and Bitcoin the network. And working together, the Bitcoin the asset specialists at NYDIG and the Bitcoin the network specialists at Lightning, they're going to get this Chapter 2 flywheel in motion, and it's going to hum. It's gonna hum. Just stay tuned for more. So this, if you've been listening to this show, this shouldn't surprise you. This is what I've described as the infrastructure inversion. And one of the really important things to point out here is look what is happening. Look why this is possible. Notice that the value here in Bitcoin and Lightning as a network isn't simply that, oh, you can write these transactions and it works. It's that the network itself is broad enough and liquid enough in every currency around the world that this is possible to tens of millions, hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars. Remember from all of our discussions of the history of money, what role money serves, money is the most liquid asset in the market. It is the economy's foundation for translating value. It's the most marketable good. Chapter 2 of Bitcoin is Bitcoin becoming a medium of exchange. And this is where it starts. And this also shows why it had to be Chapter 2, that you can't do this before it becomes a reliable store of value. Because if it's not a reliable, widespread, liquid market, and an asset that's highly desirable and is accessible in the markets globally, then how the hell is it going to do remittance? How is it possibly going to be able to translate from dollars to euros quickly and in a reliable, liquid fashion? You need markets in every country to pull that off. But that's where we're going. This is what we're moving into. And like I said, we're just at the beginning of the curve for Bitcoin, the global store of value asset. And it's going to be, and when he says there's a beautiful positive feedback loop, it's going to be incredibly, the feedback loop is going to be insane because, I really think we are just getting started. I mean, the S&P 500, the companies in the S&P 500, the Fortune 500, are just now looking at this thing. Like just now, Elon just got on board. MicroStrategy basically just got on board. This is all fresh. Every other major company is going to do this. And when they realize that Bitcoin, the network, that the liquidity on the Lightning network is finally going to be able to grow to the size at which something like this is possible, and the economics are there. The economics is there. It's absolutely aligned and ready to go. The incentives are strong. What we need are market prices for liquidity. We need market prices for capital, for inbound capital on Lightning. And we're achieving that too. And even better is we're doing it in a non-custodial way. Lightning Labs has built Lightning Pool, which allows market makers to connect buyers and sellers to a lowest common denominator price non-custodially with funds that neither side is risking with a custodian. That is insane. You start putting all of these things together and you realize just what a valuable financial system this thing truly is. This is the infrastructure inversion. Western Union is going to be Blockbuster in a matter of years. Except that unlike Blockbuster, which actually has a element of nostalgia, and there are still like two or three Blockbusters out there, and you know, sometimes you just want to go rent a physical movie, Western Union's just going to die. There's no nostalgia to having to pay and wait for money to move. And this will be as the technology of the network itself and the liquidity of the market reaches a point or is at a point that you can now do this, that you can absolutely, you can start to destroy the found, like this is when it becomes the Linux of the financial system, just like Linux is the underbelly of the internet. Everybody thinks they're using Windows and Apple, but essentially all the backbone of the internet is run on Linux. That is what Bitcoin is about to become. It's about to become the financial bedrock, or the technological bedrock of the financial system, and it's going to be exactly what gets rid of merchant fees. It's going to be what gets rid of remittance fees and the 3 business day wait time. Like that's the reason it takes 3 business days to send money from one bank to another, is that it takes to 5 o'clock that day for that bank to settle their debits and credits with the regional central bank, regional reserve bank. And then it takes to 5 o'clock the next day for them to settle their balance sheets. And then they transfer that to the new bank. And then that new bank settles theirs at the end of that day at 5 o'clock. Like that's unbelievably antiquated. It's crazy that we still use that system. And it's because there are so many restrictions, there are so many regulations, and our entire monetary system and financial system is built on authority and whitelists. It's built on the fact that you can't even participate in the network because nobody can be trusted to actually have operation in it, to actually touch it. So you have to have a banking license. You have to have millions of you have to be part of this elite club of people who actually have access to move these things and actually use these settlement networks and update ledgers like this. And because banking is so unbelievably unfair and you've actually got this awful license to print money, well, then it has to even be more elite of a club, because obviously you can't just hand out the rights to counterfeit to anybody who comes asking for the right to counterfeit. You'd absolutely blow up your financial system. You have to actually have like an elite group of people who unfairly profit at the rest of the economy. If you do that on a widespread scale, it doesn't work. You know, if everybody counterfeits, nobody gets any benefit from counterfeiting. But if you have like a couple of you and just your buddies counterfeit, well, then you can get away with it and you can be filthy, stinking, horribly rich at everybody else's expense. So it's really important that they have all of these regulations and restrictions and they have this walled garden that nobody else can play with. Think about how unbelievably, throw away the fact that it counterfeits trillions and trillions of dollars, but just think about how inefficient it is from an infrastructure standpoint. This can be replaced. This is chapter two, that we can actually use Bitcoin, the network. But what does this do to Bitcoin, the asset? When finally we have these massive liquid lightning network, this foundational infrastructure for finance relationships all over the world, settling remittance, settling international trade agreements and import-export agreements and settlement all across the debits and credit cards. What happens when your debit and credit card is funding a lightning trend? This is going to happen. This is going to happen. You're going to use your credit card one day and it's going to settle with a lightning transaction to your bank from whatever your store is, might even be overseas, doesn't really matter. Your bank, the lightning doesn't care where your bank is. And it will settle instantly in lightning and convert to whatever it is, whatever currency they're using on the other end of it. And they might even just do it in lightning. I mean, excuse me, they might even just do it in Bitcoin, because everybody's going to start having a Bitcoin asset allocation at some point very, very soon, likely. But you'll actually get final settlement. And when that happens, your credit card and your service will have to get much, much more secure, because banks are going to realize just how horrible the security of their system is and how stupid a identity-based verification is, rather than where, you know, basically your sensitive information, who you are, is your payment information. It's just stupid. But, you know, tangent a bit there. This is chapter two. This is where I think we're heading. I think this is a great little segment that Ross Stevens hit. And I love that, like, they're doing this, right? Like, this is what Ross Stevens is doing. And he's talking about Jack Mallers. Like this is like the playbook of the internet. Like, this is the exact same thing that we have seen over. Like, when people talk about, like, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, this is damn near repeating itself. I guess it makes more sense to call it rhyming, but holy crap. Like, if you're really paying attention to this, if you're really looking and taking a step back and looking at the big picture, this is the internet and the breakdown of middlemen all over again, except it's in the financial system. It's in central banks. It's in remittance companies. It's in all of the walled gardens and all of the perceived authorities in the moving and ownership of capital all around the world. And Bitcoin is going to eat their lunch. And the feedback loop that Stevens talks about in this piece, or it's not a piece, it's not an article, it's an excerpt of a conversation that he talks about in this, is that it's going to make less and less sense to keep converting. And even better is that this is going to stabilize the price of Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin will continue to go up in price, but this will level out so much volatility because there will be so, this is a huge addition to volume and liquidity in the exchange markets. I mean, think about the volume and the liquidity in like Forex markets of exchanging from one currency to the next. We're talking trillions of dollars per day. Literally, I think it's like 3 to 5 trillion or something per day in the Forex markets that's being exchanged for global trade. And this is the market that they do that in. Like, this is why they, you know, they'll buy an option or short a position or something like that, is so that, like, let's say, example I use, Apple is making a deal over a period of like 2 months with a manufacturer or something in China, and they need an exact price. They need today's price 2 months from now in order to know that they may profit on this trade and that they can properly budget for this purchase of this large, all these devices, or they're just buying a bunch of chips or something, right? So what do? They hedge. They make a position that is the size of their deal. And if the Chinese yuan or the dollar or whatever fluctuates in the meantime, they neither benefit from the rise in price nor lose from the fall in price. They hedge against it so that they keep the same price over that 2 month period. And it's specifically because of this massive market and all of this liquidity that you don't have huge shocks in the price movements of these currencies, because everybody is stabilizing specifically so that they can do business in the currency. Imagine Bitcoin becomes the bridge to all of those. Bitcoin becomes the backbone that doesn't require a huge Forex market and fees, and doesn't require days to settle things, and doesn't require going through 4 or 5 different banks just to get money from here to there. But instead, you can do this instantly. You can do this instantly anywhere in the world. Imagine that $5 trillion of daily volume being facilitated by Bitcoin and the Lightning Network. That is genuinely where I think we are headed. That's the next phase of Bitcoin's major new sphere that it's going to find itself in. Let's take a quick break, and I'm going to get some water. It's crazy late here, but I'm not done yet. So let's take a quick break, hit our sponsor, and we'll be right back. And today's wonderful sponsor is none other than Level.co. LVL. We don't need none of those silly vowels. It's just a waste of time. It's not the Bitcoin bank you deserve. It's the Bitcoin bank you need. You don't deserve to have no trading fees, but you'll get it with Level. That's right. It is a free exchange and full mobile banking that you can even get checks for your account like you're cool and it's 1985. You got direct deposit, wires, a hosted Bitcoin wallet, a debit card, and that's all in the free version, right? So for just $9 a month, you get a world debit card, you get a personal banker to help you with questions and concerns, automatic trading, and even more. Level is available in 28 non-North Carolinian states, but plan on being available to everyone except the unfortunate state of New York by the end of 2021. If you wanted to live off of Bitcoin, this is the service you've been waiting for. Check them out at guyswan.com/level. So this is where I think the bank chapter one of Bitcoin and the adoption and movement into Bitcoin as a store of value asset. That is really a serious threat, not yet to fiat currency. It is a shift out of fiat currency, nonetheless. But fiat currency already isn't a savings vehicle, right? Like very few people save in fiat. What do they save in? They save in large corporations, save in bonds and treasuries, and banks store and back their currencies with treasuries. Central banks back their back currencies with treasuries now. Gold is a store of value asset. Real estate is a store of value asset. Stocks and equities are store of value assets these days. I think these things are the major, will be the major driver of Bitcoin's capital. The amount of allocation toward a Bitcoin will be largely driven from these assets. I think chapter four or maybe three, I don't know, maybe it's three. Chapter three of Bitcoin, when it becomes a unit of count, is really when fiat currencies will be at risk. With the store of value and the global safe haven asset chapter of Bitcoin that we are currently really coming into in a very strong way, this, I really think, hits treasuries. Treasuries are the ultimate safe haven asset. They are the long-term asset. They are the treasuries are the base money of our system. It's not gold anymore. It hasn't been for a long time, and even less and less so. Treasuries are the reserve, and they have killed them. The yield on treasuries is awful. It's absolutely awful. You can't park any money there. Even with $20 million, you can barely make enough return on treasuries. In fact, in some, depending on the country, you might have negative yielding. You can't even retire on $20 million because there's nowhere to park it to get any amount of interest or yield to actually pay you $40,000 a year. Think about how crazy that is. That you could save your entire life and have essentially a fortune, and yet you can't, you really don't have a good place to put it that you can actually make a retirement off of it. Treasuries will be obliterated by Bitcoin. I genuinely think that is a huge market that this thing is going to eat alive. And it's mostly because they've killed treasuries. And Bitcoin is a far better, it doesn't even pay quote unquote yield, right? Like it's just there, but it's because it's such a hard asset, because it's such an inelastic supply, it's ends up being infinitely better because it will always increase in purchasing power as an economy gets more productive and as it becomes more adopted. And its adoption phase is going to be 20 years before it even starts to level out. So that kind of eats into central banks, but it doesn't quite eat into fiat currencies. It hits treasuries, it hits real estate, it will take some of the premium out of those items, it will take premiums out of equities. I think that phase, fiat currency is still not quite contested because Bitcoin won't be the denomination of everyday trade yet. Chapter two of Bitcoin that we're talking here in this example, I think will obliterate BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. It will take out SWIFT. It will take out chips. It will, all of the settlement systems around the world will become painfully antiquated as soon as it becomes clear that the liquidity and the volume within Bitcoin can begin to accommodate and settle the relevant amount of funds. It is literally just a market problem. It's not a technological problem anymore. As long as you just have to develop out the liquidity. We need a bigger infrastructure. We need more on-ramps and off-ramps, and we need higher volume. It's no longer a technology problem. And the Bank of International Settlements, they run, that they are the, you know, they're the big dog behind the Forex markets and these things. Imagine not having to go through an intermediary and imagine not having to wait on any time. Just this alone, the Forex markets are 24/5. 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. Ignore every other advantage. And that alone will make Bitcoin and Lightning, as we move into this next phase, the sole thing that you can really use to settle on the weekends. And after you start using it, Bitcoin markets don't close. They're 24/7, 365. Bitcoin is always running. Lightning is always running. And after you're relying on that system, as soon as you integrate that, because you can't allow your competitor to make deals and make trades and continue to use the market over the weekend while you wait for Monday's market to open, while they're doing it over the weekend, you have to. And as soon as you start adopting that, and it's faster, it's essentially free, you have trade in any currency that you want, capital controls are just skip hop right over, you don't even know they exist, why when Monday opens would you go back? Why would you ever use anything else? This is the moment. This is the technology and the shift away from long-distance phone calls, right? Like going back to the internet analogy, this is when long-distance phone calls disappear. This is when paying by the minute with your cell phone vanishes. This is the VoIP transition that revolutionized communication by using the internet to replace all of the old analog systems that required international call rates and long distance fees and all of these things. It's the same thing. And the margin on this, the profit margin to be able to offer something that nobody else can, is astronomical. This is why Western Union is trying to make a business off of something that's now free to do. This isn't like, oh, Western Union's going to become competitive and they're going to lower their fees and try to keep their customers or whatever it is. Like, the business model itself simply won't exist. You will have to provide something else, and you will be using remittance and international transfers in order to provide that other service. But in the meantime, they're going to make a fat, massive margin off sucking up all of the value in these horrible middlemen, rent-seeking companies that have been dominating the global sphere and just robbing people blind of all of this capital, because it is going to rush into companies and alternatives like Strike and everybody else who jumps on board and starts taking advantage of this sooner rather than later. This is the internet all over again, except that it's doing it to banks. It's going to do it with international settlement, and it's going to do it with import-export markets. It's going to do it with Forex markets. It is literally going to upend everything in the financial system, and everything is going to start moving faster. Everything is going to start being cheaper. Suddenly, when you send money somewhere, it actually will just show up in that other location, no matter where it is in the world. And you might even still be using your card. You might even still be using your US dollars. It is very likely that you will still be using fiat money. It will just move at 1,000 times the pace that it ever did before, because all of that fiat will be settled in Bitcoin and Lightning transactions. And if you think that incentive isn't enough to get liquidity on Lightning, then I don't know what to tell you. Then you don't understand the amount of friction that these markets have, and you don't understand what the value of money is. Why having a common settlement network and infrastructure is so unbelievably important, and why, as its own money, it must be liquid in every currency that has it as an option. You can't just do this on any currency. It has to be a global, robust, liquid monetary network. Bitcoin is the only thing that can, that is the only puzzle piece that fits in the middle of that whole system. And this is going to drive the hell out of Bitcoin, the assets curve. This is where, while chapter two, while Bitcoin, the network, is accelerating an adoption and reaching the inside of its curve, Bitcoin, the asset, is going to be on the skyrocket up shelf of its curve. Because this is when Bitcoin becomes a medium of exchange. And after we essentially finish out the bulk of the adoption curve for Bitcoin as a store of value, and then we take over remittance, we take over import and export and international settlement and Forex and all of these things, as soon as we knock out all of those markets, then that $5 trillion a day in liquidity and volume in trade makes Bitcoin, even if it's still going up at 1% a month, it makes it the most stable asset in the world. It just makes it stable, a stable incline. And that is when Bitcoin finally becomes a global unit of account. And I guess we'll call that chapter three. So for anybody who thinks there's no profit potential left, or that they're late to the game, we're just beginning chapter two, and chapter one isn't even done. There's a lot left to do. This is still the internet in the 90s. It is. And I don't know how long we'll be able to use that analogy, because it feels like, I guess, you know, the 90s was 10 years. So, yeah, this is still the internet in the 90s. It's been 10 years. So that's where we are. So think about the difference in the size, the scope, and the value of the internet today versus in the 90s. I think we have that much value left to accrue in Bitcoin, and then some, because Bitcoin is also going to re-revolutionize the internet, and the internet has a smaller total addressable market than Bitcoin does. The amount of capital and the size of the infrastructure and the industries that Bitcoin is obsoleting is literally even that much larger than all of the communication and infrastructure and industries that the internet disrupted and replaced. So when I say we're just getting started, I mean it. We are just getting started. And I am just getting finished. Because it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I got a little bit interrupted. We did the Bitcoin for Beginners on Cafe Bitcoin, and I answered questions for 3 hours with Camilla and Brecky and Phil and a couple other people. We had a really good time. I really love Clubhouse. If you guys haven't checked it out, y'all got to get up on Clubhouse. It is iOS only. And then you have to get an invite. I think I actually have a couple invites. I don't think I've used all mine up. If you want a Clubhouse invite, and you want to, you know, jump up there and hang out with the crew and ask questions and jump in all these, it's really cool. And, it really is a neat platform. I have been really enjoying the way that it allows you to cross between different groups or different audiences. Like, it is so much better. Like, there's still, like, these serious walls and disconnections on Twitter. You know, when you send out a tweet or something, you're always talking to, like, the same people. You know, the people that follow you and then the people that are one step removed from that. When I tweet out, it's only Bitcoiners, really, that are seeing it, and maybe a couple of crypto people, right? But it doesn't really make it out there. Technically, the whole public could see it. And, you know, maybe something goes viral and it gets tweeted by everybody for some reason or another. But nonetheless, it's still very segmented, or segregated, maybe is the better word. Clubhouse is like a really different platform. It's like ethereal subreddits, like subreddits that you just make like based on a topic. And then a whole bunch of people jump in and join, and everybody talks about it. And there's like a stage. It's just a really cool thing. I don't know. This episode's not about Clubhouse. Yeah, just hit me up if you, I think I have a couple of invites left and you're on iOS. We've been having a lot of fun in Cafe Bitcoin. The Swan Bitcoin team has put that on, and they've really done awesome. And it's been fun answering questions and talking about all this stuff and Elon Musk and anything and everything. And with that, actually, if you've still been looking for a place to buy Bitcoin and you haven't yet, get on it. SwanBitcoin.com/guy. Both supports this show and gets you $10 free. It gets me $5 and you $10. It's a really great way to A, support the show, but also it's the best place to buy Bitcoin. It's where I do all of my buying now. I straight up swear by Swan Bitcoin. So definitely check them out. With that though, let's go ahead and close this episode. Thank you guys so much. This is chapter 2 of Bitcoin. It is beginning, and get ready. Lightning is awesome. It is here. It is ready, and it's going to freaking explode. Much love to Level.co, the mobile Bitcoin banking services, and the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Simple as can be. If you are not using or have not checked out both of those, you definitely got to check them out at guyswan.com. Both of them are right there at the top of the page. And thank you guys so much for listening. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And until then, guys, take it easy. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.